are sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store.
Oh, feeling intense today.
I'm feeling muscled and oiled.
Ooh, oiled up because it's the season 3 finale. After so goddamn long, we finally made it. We've army crawled our way.
It's only been 23 weeks.
Gaslighting me on air.
I'm girl bossing it up.
Your girl boss gatekeep gaslighting. Yes. I was like, I can't remember the other one. Wow. We're at the finale. This feels good. It feels right.
It feels freeing.
It feels freeing. It does. I am so proud of us. Look at us go. We're amazing. What the fuck? We're geniuses, one might say. I agree.
I think we are nominated, if not have already won a Pulitzer.
I have to check up on that, but I think you're correct. Yeah. That's how good we are.
Yeah. And you know what else we are?
What else are we?
Wisteria Gays.
Holy shit. Look at you remembering to say our name at the beginning of the episode. Like a professional. Whoa. Ooh,
once a year.
We act professional. People don't come to this podcast for professionality. They come for goobers, which is what they get. We are goobers. Do you want to talk about season 3, episode 23?
I would love to.
Well, let me tell you, this episode premiered May 20th, 2007. Feels like a lifetime ago. It was written by our king, Mark Cherry, as well as Joe Keenan and Joey Murphy, and directed by David Grossman. A classic slate of DH artists came together for this finale. We love to see it. For hashtag Sondheim Watch, this episode is called Getting Married Today. Pretty aptly named. And it is an iconic song from the musical company. If you don't know Getting Married Today, you have to look it up because it is like Stephen Sondheim. It is the meanest thing he's ever done to anyone in the universe by writing that song for women to have to sing.
It's so interesting to watch though anybody perform it,
because when someone can nail it, it is like the most impressive musical theater feat I feel like ever. To me, it's just so crazy.
And I will say, just doing it the fastest isn't necessarily nailing.
No. Speaking of getting married today, we open on Gabby's wedding day. She wants a traditional wedding. She wants to, what are you laughing at? What are you giggling at, you goober?
I don't know.
She wants a traditional wedding, Ned. She wants to be a traditional bride.
It's just
she's
dumb.
Missing. She's being a bit of a bridezilla because Bree is late with her something new. And Susan and Lynette are helping her get ready. And she's trying to help the meltdown. But I don't even give a shit about Gabby because I see Bree's feet in the back of her head. And I am soaring through the stratosphere with excitement that Bree is back.
I did not realize. And like, you all know this, I've been talking about it for the past 2 weeks. I enjoyed the break, but I truly, until this point in time, I did not realize how much I missed her.
I did too. I missed Bree. Fuck, you know what? I fucking missed Orson. And I didn't think I missed Orson. And then like later when he's talking, I was like, how come I missed Orson? Who the fuck am I? I think I just missed this family. They have the best storylines. The thing is, Bree has the best storylines. She's the best actor on the show. I missed her so goddamn much.
I full-heartedly agree with that.
She looks amazing.
She looks amazing. And she also looks pregnant. Sorry,
she
pregnant?
Does. Porgnant. She's porgy. I do want to say Lynette saying, oh wow, I wrote down for Loat because yes. It was just like also me. So that's my like one Loat nominee was Lynette going, oh wow, at Brie, because it made me smile. Yeah, she's porgy.
Yes, I had instant thoughts about this.
Tell me.
I mean, you know who I am. I've seen Glee 5 times.
And you're also psychic.
I'm also psychic. I know what a fake pregnancy is. And although I was like, whoa, she's pregnant, I was like, immediately, oh, that's a fake pregnancy. Because they literally left because Danielle was pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, it definitely it's like a reveal, but you could also just put one and one together, I think, with this. It's also very funny because though they tried to hide it, you still could see Marcia Cross is pregnant. And so, like, you could see the top of her stomach and it looked different. Like, yeah. You could see the, like, ridge kind of the fake belly on her in that pink dress. That pink dress was, like, a bad choice to hide a pregnancy belly. Like, I feel like I would have gone with a patterned situation. Like, what was she gonna do if someone asked to feel the baby? I don't know. I just feel like the shape just looked really weird. Like, I think it's pretty obvious it's fake from the get-go because we've seen Marcia Cross pregnant already in the show, basically. So it's like we could tell that she's obviously. And even later when she takes off the belly, I think you could still see that Marcia Cross still has a little bit of a belly. And it's, you know, because, like, it doesn't just, like, magically go away when a baby comes out of you. Like, you know, your body takes a while to change. So, like, you can still see that Marcia Cross still has a bit of a belly, but not quite the size they're going for. But I also feel like, how long was she gone? Because months. At the end of the episode, okay, months? Because at the end of the episode, he's like, we need the 6-month belly. But in my brain, that's such a long time to be on a honeymoon.
I think they were gone for at least 4 months because they said... Wasn't she already 2 months in when they found out, quote unquote?
Yeah, that's what he said. I just think that's so weird to me that they'd be gone for months on a honeymoon. That just feels kind of crazy. I guess it was just the timeline is confusing to me here. I thought it was a little messy in terms of, like, how long were they gone? Why is she so pregnant? Because to me, it only feels like a certain amount of weeks, right? And I know that, like, we're somewhat watching in real time. Ish, but I don't know. It's just kind of, I just think the timeline's a little weird here.
Yeah, it's been a while because was Brie there for the opening of the pizzeria?
How long has this woman been gone? I do think they wrap her up around episode 15, 16 of the set. So she's been gone for maybe 8 episodes or so. So that's 8 weeks, right?
Yeah.
But maybe they might have done that thing where they have, like, because you know how sometimes Desperate Housewives, much like us, has random breaks in the middle of seasons? So that might be, that might have happened. I'm not quite sure. If someone knows more than us, please let us know because I don't know what's going on.
I can't believe we're authentic.
Asking for help?
No, taking hiatuses.
Oh, yeah. The reason why we take long hiatuses is because we're referencing the TV show, not because we're disorganized and tired.
Immersing ourselves in the lore.
Okay. Oh, but hey, before we get into all this stuff, we got to cut 3 days earlier, before the wedding, where Mary Alice tells us family is the most important thing. They're the ones we want to laugh with during the good times, the ones who console us during the bad. And even when they leave us, their voices ring in our minds. And we get a weird nightmare with Edie, where her mom is like, insulting her while Carlos eats her out.
she's like actively having sex with Carlos, and her mom is like, you're gonna be alone forever.
I know where you're going. You're gonna be just like me.
I'm gonna see you in hell.
Here's the thing. I wish Mark Cherry wrote every episode, because in this episode alone we get so much more psychology of, like, all of the characters than we have gotten the entire fucking season.
Yeah. It's just, it's you can really see that he knows how these characters think, like nobody else does, you know?
And I just, like, even in this, it's weird, but, like, getting that idea in that, like, a deep-seated, clearly fear of Edie's is being, like, her mom ending up alone. Like, these are all things that are obvious, but it's nice to hear them articulated. And I'm like, yes, please talk about these characters more. And later, I think there's an amazing scene with Lynette where, like, we get, like, a swath of backstory in the most, like, deft stroke I've ever seen this show do. Of, like, we get so much interesting backstory in, like, 2 minutes. And I'm like, that is the Mark Cherry touch. And I wish that it was in every single episode.
Oh, yeah.
But she wakes up from that nightmare, and we have a little moment with Gabby and Carlos.
We do. Gabby kind of shows up to the house and immediately says, chicken, fish, what do you want? Which one? Come on, man.
Chicken, fish, or me?
Carlos is very confused, but Gabby says, you're coming to my wedding. What do you want to eat? And Carlos is very confused because he did not plan on going to her wedding. He planned on just staying home.
Living his goddamn life.
But no, Gabby cannot have that. People are going to think that she's mad at him.
Which she is. But she doesn't want that, so then he agrees to at least come to the reception.
I did like the little pushback where she was like, you can't come to the ceremony. And he was like, you really want me to start laughing in front of everybody?
And we cut to the Meyer household, soon to be the Delfino household. I don't know. What should we call it going forward? Who knows? But Delfino. The Myfino, the Deller. I don't know. We cut to Susan to Mike's house. She's planning the dessert at the wedding. Mike is talking her out of a chocolate fountain. And he's like, you know, maybe you're going a little over the top here. And Susan wants her wedding to match up with, you know, Bree's and Gabby's. And to that I say, Susan, you are, though you somehow make enough money to afford this house, you are much more poorer than both of those people are. So, yes. Like, because, like, clearly Orson makes good money. Bree, I assume, has a settlement from Rex. Like, I don't know how she exists at the rate she does. But Gabby's married to the mayor. Like, your wedding isn't going to be as big as those people's. But she wants it to be.
And Mike tries to reassure her that, like, if they are your friends, they should just be happy for us. And she kind of laughs in his face.
Susan's like, oh, my sweet summer child. You don't know how bitchy white women in the suburbs work.
That is pretty much that scene, because we then quickly cut to Lynette taking a phone call in which we get confirmation that she does, in fact, have Hodgkin's lymphoma.
She's going on chemo.
Yeah. And she is asking her sister, right?
Yeah.
She's talking with her sister on the phone to ask for help with finances because they're not going to be able to afford all of the bills.
Yes, and her sister, they have like $10,000 or something in a deductible they need to pay for the chemotherapy treatments. Mm-hmm. And apparently her sister's husband lost his job, and so they just can't do it. And her sister is like, why don't you ask mom? And Lynette gets very, very angry about that and is like, absolutely not. And that's obviously a hint at how Lynette feels about her mother that we get way more into throughout this whole episode. But Tom just kind of, the end of the scene is basically Tom just saying, I'll find the money, you just focus on getting better. And that's kind of it. But we have a lot more Lynette coming down the pipeline.
Is Julie the only person here who gets along with their mom? Because I feel like every single person has like major issues with their mom. Maybe Carlos doesn't.
Well, Carlos loved his mom, but she is dead now. Did you forget that Mama Solis died? We sang a whole song about it. Mama Solis. Maybe Carlos, I mean, I'm sure he still loves her, but she is indeed dead. That's not funny. I've been laughing really hard. I'm not laughing at Mama Solis being dead. I'm laughing at Ned forgetting, I promise everyone. I mean, Andrew loves his mommy now. Andrew's been really great with Bree.
He's
now.
He's a mommy's boy.
He is a mommy's boy. Susan kind of likes her mom-ish.
Ish.
It's less dramatic than, like, Lynette, for sure, and Orson. But, yeah, I would say, like, Julie definitely is, like, the best relationship probably with her mom than anybody else. So on that note, Mama Solis returns from the dead. And that's the rest of the episode. Can you imagine?
And that's the season.
That's the season finale. As Mama Solis comes back, that'd be great. No, we get this little weird scene of Bree and Orson at a hotel, I guess, getting ready to come back to Fairview. This scene was so weird to me because it seems like they're trying to like start a new mystery that they immediately like debunk by the end of the episode. But she's like, I feel bad for putting you through this, and I wouldn't be mad if you ran away. What's up?
No, please continue. I just have a thought to say after.
No, he's like, I'm gonna raise this child as if it's my own. And I was like, are they trying to make us think that Bree's pregnant with like another man's child? Like, what is the, like, I just think it's funny how they could have just told us here. I don't know. I just think it's them trying to sort of be like, ooh, what's going on, was kind of silly to me.
I think it's silly, but I think that's just what desperate housewives need.
We need silly.
Yes, I think generally as TV shows just get longer seasons, as they keep going on, they get sillier and sillier. And I think Desperate Housewives is starting to dip their toes into that. I think this is prime. This is ripe for shenanigans. minds.
We need to enter our silly era. Absolutely.
Yes, we need to enter our Desperate Housewives is entering its silly era.
No, I think it's super fun. I also felt like, I think I wrote this down, but later, when they're talking to Julie later, which we'll talk about, I do think it's also funny how it's like, the vibes I got from here is like, Bree's having another man's baby. And then the vibes I got from that scene is like, they murdered Danielle. Like, it seems like they're trying to cover up a fucking murder. And I think it's very funny.
I love them so much. They're so
strange. I missed this stupid little family. I'm so pumped that they're back.
And then we cut to dinner with Victor's dad. Victor's dad is a little bit of a creepo.
I mean, there's not a ton of the scene other than, like, Victor mentions wanting to run for governor. And Gabby's like, fuck you. No, you're not. And that's kind of, like, the vibe. But the creepy white men, they exchange eyes at the end of the scene. Like, okay.
We then cut to Susan's house. It's the middle of the night. It's, like, 3 a.m. And Mike is getting up. He accidentally wakes Susan up, and we find out in this scene that he has been advertising as a 24-hour plumber for at least this past week, and he didn't mean to wake her up, but, you know, he's just trying to earn some extra money for the wedding. Susan tries to say that he doesn't need to do that, and maybe they can cut back the champagne fountain, and he says no, he wants the wedding to be what she wants it to be. And yeah, you can definitely tell he's a little insecure right now because he doesn't have as much money as Ian. And, like, we talk about that later in the episode, right?
This is mostly where he brings it up because he's like, oh, yeah. I'm not Ian. I can't whisk you off to France and I can't do all these things. But, like, I don't want you to have to settle. And she mentions, like, I could max out my credit cards. And he's like, I don't want to start our life with debt. Like, I just want to fucking do this and give you the wedding you want. And, like, I can do this. And it's just very, like, selfless and sad to me that, like, he just really wants her to be so happy. And, like, it makes me sad, but I do think the turnaround at the end of the episode is amazing. I love what Susan does at the end of the episode, and I know we will talk about it, but I just think I did think this is a very sweet storyline that shows, like, the ways in which they care about each other and the ways in which they've gotten so much better at just communicating. Like, he could have hidden this, and I'm glad he just was like, no, this is how I feel. Like, I just think that they've gotten to a really good place. Like, I really love Mike and Susan right now.
So do I. And it's all about that communication. Yes. They don't want any more mishaps. They don't want any more, all they want is to be with each other and to be nothing but, like, truthful with each other, you know? So they're like, we don't see the point anymore in just sneaking around because you're going to find out eventually.
Yes, I love that. That's maturity. That's love. I love that. I love that for them. Yeah, I have not even attempted to start looking at wedding stuff, but just the idea of the cost of a wedding gives me complete hives. Oof. Oof, oof, a doof. For those who don't know, I am engaged. We're probably going to end up just having, like, a courthouse marriage. But we would like to have some sort of ceremony. And, there's a venue we kind of like that's going to cost, like, $3,000. And I'm like, okay. Jesus Christ. So, like, weddings are, they're expensive. That sucks so bad.
And then, I mean, I was going to say a MILF comes to town, but, I mean, she's not really a good person.
She's not really a good person. She's more of a GILF, too. But even then, like, the GILF of the lane is Sophie, is Susan's mom. Yes. She's, like, the main GILF.
She is GILFy TM.
GILFy TM, yeah.
We get a new woman shows up on the lane. Lynette's mom.
Stella. Yeah. And I wrote down, she's played by Polly Bergen? Bergen? I'm not sure, but she's just to give some context on her, I was looking her up. She seems really cool. She's an Emmy Award winning and Tony Award nominated and Golden Globe nominated actress. And she's best known for her roles in the 1962 film Cape Fear and 1963's The Caretakers. But she's also been in a ton of movies and television through the 50s and 60s all the way up to the end of her life in 2014. So she's no longer with us. But some fun things I saw that she was in was she was in John Waters' Crybaby. She's in The Love Boat, Murder, She Wrote. She's in The Sopranos. What? And, of course, she is here in Desperate Housewives. So, Polly Bergen, shout out. She's not related to Candace Bergen, who I saw the last name Bergen, and I was like, is she related to Candace? And she's not.
And she is here to stay. And everybody is pretty confused about this because they haven't seen her in about like 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. She's not been in Lynette's life at all, I don't think.
Yeah, she brings the baby's presents, and they're actually toys for babies. The twins look at them and they're like, we're too old for these.
The twins are 8.
Yeah.
Is that what an 8-year-old looks like? I just don't know what kids look are supposed to look like. Mm. Her saying, is that Tom's little bastard, is killed me.
B-A-S-T.
We got like the most it was so deft the way it like unloaded backstory on us. I just thought it was really, really well written. Because in this scene, we find out that Lynette's mom had breast cancer.
Yeah.
And that when Lynette was only 13, she was basically having to be a mother to her siblings. So she cooked meals, she cleaned the house, she took care of her sisters. And she makes a quick little jab that continues to be picked up on through the episode that her mother was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. It's just like so interesting how like in this little moment, it doesn't feel like it's banging you over the head, but you find out so much about Lynette's life in just this little snippet. I thought that was really, really cool. And I like that hopefully we're going to get more of this. Like, we really don't know how we get like a little bit of Gabby, right? We know she was in sort of an abusive household as well, mm-hmm. but we haven't really gotten into that. We only know a little bit about Bree, that her mom mm-hmm. Died. Like, we
a
like
car.
And so like I love this. I want to know more about these women, and I think that Stella is a great way to induce some like backstory for Lynette. I hope we see her sisters too.
That would be very interesting.
Bring it on, baby.
And then from Stella we go to Carlos and Edie in the bedroom. They have just gotten done having sex. Edie wants to cuddle, and Carlos wants her to get those legs in the air.
It could fall right out if you just stand up. Yeah.
And we're doing business, okay? And we're gonna have to get going again in a couple minutes, okay? So get ready, Edie. That's how Carlos is treating this situation.
He's hanging her up like a slab of meat, as she said. I'm going, you're no spring chicken. I was like, bitch. She should kick him in the head.
Yeah, he's just like very set on, I want this baby. That's what this is to me. And Edie is very much, please, can we talk? Can we cuddle? Can I have a beer?
I don't think she thought this through, like at all. I don't know. I feel bad for her in a way, though she is manipulating him. But I really don't think she thought this through.
I feel like Edie doesn't think a lot of things through.
I think that's an apt statement. I think that's a correct thing to say. One of my favorite things about Edie is her affinity for beer. I do love that is since season one. Remember when she got that fucking like Corona with the hoobs? Like, I love that. Like, that's the thread of Edie, is that she's a beer gal. And I fucking love that.
Yeah.
That's just a random thing I love.
Lesbian of the episode.
Edie drinking beer, even though she doesn't
drink beer. And yeah, they just kind of fight in this scene, and she kind of storms off. And then we go back to Tom and Lynette, and Lynette is trying to convince Tom that they don't need her mom to stay with them. They have McCluskey they can try to hire, and like, please, just like anything but her mom. And she talks a bit more about her mom being an alcoholic.
Yeah, she talks a bit about, like, it's very subtle, but she says that her mom used to beat them as well. Like, it's very, like, and that she would take them away from their homes when she had, like, a hookup. Like, clearly Lynette has a very traumatized view of her childhood. Like, I hope so bad they get into more, because they put it in a lot of muddy areas near the end of the episode. But, yeah, like, so Lynette just is, like, I don't know, is really traumatized by her mom and does not want her near here. And like, this show loves to fucking do that, like, you have to forgive your family thing. And that's just like, I just so don't feel that way at all. And so it is kind of frustrating for me when this show always does the, like, you have to forgive them, they're family. And I'm like, no, people are not obligated to forgive the people who have deeply, deeply hurt them and wounded them. Like, they're like, people are not obligated to forgive their abusers. Or like, they did it with Orson this whole season too. Like, Orson was under no obligation to forgive his mother and Alma, And I'm glad he didn't. And yeah. So, you know, I think that there's probably more nuance they're trying to build into this stuff with her mom that I'm sure will be more season four. But, like, I don't know. Lynette, like, should be allowed to say, this person who traumatized me, I don't want them in my house. Like, she should be allowed to say that. But
yeah.
Oh.
There's no, it's exactly what you said. It's a lot of, and I don't know if it's just like, yeah, I don't know if it's just like a straight people thing. But it's like something growing up I would just hear generally a lot, you know, is just like, you don't have to like me, but you have to love me, when that is not true.
No, it's not. It's not. I think family used that as an excuse to be terrible to the people yes. they're related to, because there's this expectation of constant affection and respect when, like, I hate that. Yeah, it's made too many monsters. The idea yes. that, like, you can treat people however you want, and because they're related to you, it doesn't matter. I think as queer people, we obviously have a specific view on that, but, like, yes. that should be everyone's view. No one, regardless of sexual orientation or identity, should deal with family members fucking steamrolling them and treating them like shit because they're family. It's fucked up.
I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, but it's kind of like it's like a one-sided relationship, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like they expect so much from you, and yet when you try to get that same thing from them, they can't reciprocate.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that parents are the biggest people who do that. Yes. Oftentimes it's like there's people who become parents because they genuinely want to, like, care for another human being. And then there are people who become parents and it sometimes seems like you just wanted, like, a person to control. And that's not what parenthood should be. And yeah, I agree. It's very one-sided. And it just seems like I'm on Team Lynette here. I wanted her to be able to, like, put the foot down. But I also appreciate that the show is not giving it to us that easy. I agree. I appreciate that, like, especially with that last scene with them, that the show is wanting to tell a more complicated story. And I'm super interested to see what they're gonna do with Stella next season. I don't know. So, like, it's like, oh, I'm mad about it, but I am glad that the show is trying to, like, I don't know, like, let this just be complicated and let Lynette be angry about it. I'm just kind of, I'm interested. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I'm interested. And I will say the important part of this scene, even though we've rambled about it, is that Stella is listening at the door, and Stella does hear Tom bring up Rick. That's, like, the most important yes. aspect of this scene. But I feel like we should mention that before we move on. But that was mostly the plot that, like, needed to come out of that scene. But I'm glad we discussed it anyway.
Yeah.
Warny.
Yeah, I am as well.
Yes.
Because the next scene we cut to is yep. Gabby is horny. She wants sex, and Victor's like, I thought we weren't supposed to see each other before the wedding. And then she goes, yeah, but that was before I was horny. And she basically finds out that Victor has been looking at polling info for possibly running for governor. And she gets pretty pissed. Because she said, I am not doing this again. I already had a husband who treated his job better than he treated me.
And he's like, I told myself I wouldn't let a stupid woman ruin my life. And he calls her stupid because he's a fucking asshole.
He is a fucking asshole.
I can't believe I ever liked Victor, even for one episode. I feel like a fucking fool. I feel like a fool.
I am a fool.
I'm a fool for love. I just can't get enough. That's in the John Tucker Must Die soundtrack.
Hell yeah. Listen to our John episode. Tucker Must Much Die. Check out our Patreon.
yeah, I mean, I'm glad she leaves. She cancels the wedding. She's like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Fuck your life. I'm leaving. And I wish that was the end of it, but alas, it is not.
It is not. It's not over. Because the next morning, we're at Gabby's house, and she gets a visit from Victor's dad. Victor's dad starts to apologize for him, saying the only reason he's doing this is because he never really thinks that Victor is good enough. Victor's never really going to have his approval, so that's why he wants to run for governor in the first place. And that he also tells her Victor actually called him the other night after she stormed out and chewed out his ass, saying that he's gonna completely cut him off. He's done with his dad's crap, all of that jazz. And so he's here.
Yeah, I had an inkling that this was all a fucking lie when the dad is looking at them making up and smiling. But by the end of the episode, I'm pretty convinced that him and his dad set this lie up in order to get Gabby back, which is like deeply fucked that him and his dad like worked together to like rope her back into this fucking marriage. Mm-hmm. It's just like very gross. And I'm sure it's because like if the new mayor, right, they've been publicizing this wedding for a long time. I'm sure if the new mayor was left at the altar, it would be a huge scandal, blah, 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 blah. I had an inkling and I'm like, there's no way this is real. And then by the end of the episode, I'm pretty convinced they pulled this lie off. Yes, deeply so.
It is deeply evil.
Speaking of deeply evil, we cut to Edie heading out to the wedding. She says, bye, Carlos. I'll see you at the reception. Danny, the paperboy, shows up.
Danny.
This is yet another, as we love to say, Desperate Housewives moment where they write a random thing specifically to get us to another thing. Yeah. So Danny does not matter. We've never really met Danny, but he shows up. And because Carlos is short on cash, he has to go to Edie's purse. Danny is literally only there to get Carlos to Edie's purse. Yes. Because when Carlos opens the purse, he finds the birth control and he's pissed.
How dare you lie to me? How dare you mess with birth control like this, Edie? How dare you mess with something immoral, so sacred like birth control, and keep taking it and not get pregnant and trick me like that? How could you ever do that? I'm not saying it's right what she's doing. I'm just saying, Carlos,
he's done it too.
You fucking have done this.
Look, we can get into it later, but there's that part where he's like, I don't know how I ruined all my life. And I'm like, look, this man's had some good character development. Yes, I will give him that. But him being like, I don't know what I did to ruin my marriage. And I'm like, well, I lay out a giant list.
Like, there is
I'm
a
like,
long
well,
list,
you were
dude.
Abusive. You're a cheater. You tampered with birth control to try to impregnate your wife against her will. You were abusive emotionally and physically. Like, he loves to like pot kettle it, but like, he is not the best guy. He's definitely had character development. I'm not saying I dislike Carlos anymore, but I do love him just pretending like he's like, why is all this bad stuff happening to me, as if he's never done bad things to other people. He was also violent and jealous, and like, it's just he is an enigma of a man. It is weird with this Carlos. It does feel like that Carlos never existed. Like, he is so different than how he used to be. It is sort of, for me, like, a complete 180 character-wise. But when I do sit and think about it, I'm like, no, he did used to be really, really terrible, huh?
Not to bring up Glee again, but...
Oh, my God.
You could say that Carlos is kind of like the Karofsky of...
When are you starting a Glee podcast? That's the real question.
I need to watch it a sixth time, you know, because there's six seasons, six times. I do have a theory that there are three separate television shows inside that one television show. I would love to discuss it one day.
We get Andrew running down anyway. the little path outside the house to hug his mommy, and it was very cute. I love now that Andrew's a sweet little mommy's boy. Speaking of another character who's had a complete 180 character development, Andrew is also completely unlike the way he used to be, but I don't care.
I love this Andrew.
I love it. I love him being a little mommy's boy. It's cute. And this is the scene I referred to earlier where it looks like they're trying to hide Danielle's murder.
Yeah, because Julie walks up, says hi, and she wants to know where Danielle is because she hasn't been returning her calls or her emails. And Brie is like, oh, well, Danielle is studying abroad. That's where she is, and she loves it, and she just beg to stay, and you will get an email tomorrow morning.
Yeah, Julie, it's just, I loved them like getting caught every 2 seconds of her being like, she's not returning my calls. It's like, oh, her reception's really bad. Or my emails. Computers don't exist in Switzerland. Like, I don't know, like them trying to like find lies to say to like explain Julie away. I thought it was very funny. And we have not seen Andrew in 800 years. Has he just been living at the house by himself? I am sorry, but where is that spinoff? This is the moment in which we get back to the beginning of the episode, where it is the wedding day. So we are back at the wedding day. It's the beginning of the episode where we kind of, you know, flashed back from. The ladies are reunited, and it feels so good that these ladies are here, and I'm glad that they're all together again. Baby, I want more ladies shenanigans in season 4. That is my request, Mr. Cherry.
I would like to low.
Okay. I love that for the finale.
They're all holding hands. You know, there's 4 of them, right?
Yes.
Right. There's 4 of them. Four-way kiss.
Four-way kiss. I love the idea of loading all the ladies together, being reunited.
Yes.
I would go ahead and lock that down. I love that.
Yes.
The lote is all the ladies loving one another and being reunited. And after they're reunited, we cut to the wedding, and the wedding is happening. And that's it, really. But Edie, the most important part of this is Edie's in the back, drinking, hanging out. Carlos shows up and immediately confronts her, and then fights in the back while like Gabby is fully getting married.
Jeez, yeah. He's pissed. He's like, I'm never going to trust you. We are done. Don't ever talk to me again. And Edie says, you don't get it. I was trying to save what we had. Which...
girl.
Edie.
She's so lonely. Like, I just want her to be with someone who actually wants to be with her. Like, she is so fucking lonely. It makes me sad.
Lonely. She is so lonely. She has nobody all on her own.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. But they break up pretty effectively. Carlos is like, I'm never talking to you again, and he leaves. And we cut to the reception. McCluskey comes up to Gabby for like a second and is like, do you hear that Edie Carlos screaming at each other? And Gabby's like, I don't care. And goes over to Bree and Orson, who are like, clearly they've practiced this. They're like weaving this tale of, and then we were in Switzerland and I was a little sick and I went, let's get a pregnancy test. Like this like story they've woven together. And this is the moment where I was like, did I miss Orson? Because I thought he was being really cute. And I think I mostly just miss Kyle MacLachlan, I think, because I fucking love Kyle MacLachlan.
I obviously don't know how Orson's character will develop as the show goes on. But right now, I really like the dynamic. I really like the, just like,
yeah.
I hope he is able at least next season to have a bit of fun. I hope him and Bree can just be in love and have some shenanigans for a little bit, if anything, before it falls apart. I'm just saying. I don't know if it will. I'm not like trying to guess or whatever. This isn't a prediction. I'm just, soap operas are soap operas.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Kyle MacLachlan is such a good funny actor too, because he's funny in Twin Peaks. Like he balances that like drama with the humor really well. And he's also, if you watch Portlandia, he's the mayor in Portlandia, and he's super funny in that. Like he's a good like comedic actor, and he's good at playing the goof. And so I hope that I hope they let him be a bit more goofy now that he's not necessarily like the murder subplot of the season. Because, you know, the whole beginning half, he was very dire because he was the main suspect in a murder case. And now that he's not that, that'd be cool if, you know, I don't know. It would be cool.
Yeah.
If they let him be funny. Sorry, I just had a thought. I have the worst memory. Yeah. Okay. You know this. Probably people that listen to this podcast know this. Mike confronted him about the fact that Orson ran him over, right?
Yeah.
Right when they were in the parking garage. That's why he got pushed. So Mike knows. Yeah. Did that ever, like... closure, like, is that still open? Is that like subplot still open of like Mike and Orson hating each other? Because I genuinely don't remember.
I'm scared to think about that.
Well, someone let me know, because I have terrible memory. Is that something we're still dealing with? Let me know in our DMs. But moving on. Bree's like, wow, life's crazy. Lynette, what's going on with you? And Lynette hides her cancer from her friends. Lynette? What the fuck, Queen? Remember when you said we have to tell each other things? And you're always the one hiding?
Remember, Lynette, when you were addicted to pain medication and your friends said that they were there for you through anything?
Please, Queen. Please. Please.
Lynette.
Please. I wish Lynette would talk to her friends, but that's kind of the scene.
Then we cut to Gabby. She is looking for Victor, and she finds him. He's talking to his dad, and,
I'm gonna kill both.
They're talking about how, now that they are officially married, they've secured him the Latino vote. And, like, they literally call her an asset in this scene.
The vows have been said. The contract's been signed, theoretically.
I just... Woof. Like, just right after the wedding, you gotta give us that reveal, huh? You gotta give her that right after the wedding? You gotta just put her through that pain?
Yeah, I feel like Gabby definitely, more than any other main character, gets, like, passed around a lot as like an item, and it's fucking sucks, and I'm begging for the day that Gabby is an independent woman and just like I genuinely know we've said it before, I would love a single Gabby moment. Like, I would love a single, but especially because like I just feel like she genuinely needs that time for herself to like recalibrate how she goes into a romantic relationship, because she's kind of 2 for 2 with shitty guys right now. I mean, 3 for 3 if you count John Tucker, who was like also, you know, a mess. This just sucks. I do think this is like worse than most, and I don't know, I hate this for her. I want her to like be able to be a person and be independent and not be tied to a man. Like, I would love it if like I want her to be in power in a relationship, I guess. And I think that she frequently thinks she has the most power, but doesn't actually sometimes. I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling. I have no idea what I'm saying. I've never spoken words before.
And then we get a very quick scene of the Scavo household. Stella's watching over the babies. They got to watch a grown-up movie. Now they gotta go play. Kayla wants to watch another movie, and yeah, kind of makes a deal with grandmama to tell her about Rick in exchange to watch another movie.
And then we have another kind of small scene as well of Susan back at the wedding. Susan's bringing some food to Mike, and he is completely passed out because he is overworked. He's exhausted. And in this moment, Susan has an idea, seeing how tired he is, and it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. And I love that she knows this and doesn't wait a second before going over to the Reverend and asking, what are you doing tonight?
I can't believe she's going to cheat on Mike and marry the Reverend.
She's gonna fuck that Reverend tonight. She's like, God, fuck this guy.
She's gonna rock that Reverend's world, just like Edie did that one time.
Yes, Edie did fuck that Reverend. I remember I was about to say she's the OG Fleabag, but no, Edie's the OG Fleabag.
I can't remember that Mama Solis is dead, but I can remember that Edie fucked a priest.
In like a montage in the pilot. That's what you remember. I think that is so funny. But also, I remember that it was a montage in the pilot, and I also can't remember something that happened this season. So, you know, we both have worms in our brain. So, you know, it's fine.
And then we go back to Gabby. She finds Carlos. He's kind of hiding in her bridal suite, just getting shit-faced. And he apologizes for ruining the wedding. He starts to freak out a little bit, saying that he has ruined his life and he doesn't know how he lost her, like you were saying before, when we all know how he lost her.
Yeah, I said I didn't remember season one Carlos, and clearly neither does Gabby, because she goes right for those tonsils, baby.
Yeah.
Then we get to a deeply intense scene compared to that. Lynette shows up at the house, kind of insults her mom, and her mom immediately leaps into a fight. They throw some jabs back and forth, and Stella brings up Rick to taunt Lynette, and Lynette is just totally heartbroken that like the kids know about it and that they're who told Stella. And There's this, I wonder if they're going to get into this, because this is very interesting, this stepdad conversation where Lynette is like, we were happiest when Glenn was around and you drove him away because you were bored with him. And we get the implication that Stella cheated on Glenn, this stepfather. And Stella says this line that was like, you're just mad because you didn't do what I did. Like, you didn't fuck Rick and I got to fuck the person I wanted to fuck, or like something like that. And how she brings up that Lynette was like, you earned it when she got cancer, saying that cancer was her punishment for cheating. And Stella is like, so is this your fucking punishment? And I was shitting my pants.
I'm shitting my pants all over again.
Shitting everywhere.
Just hearing you talk about it.
It's so intense, but it's so well written.
It is.
Like, Mark Cherry's the fucking king. Like, I cannot believe. The scene was so well acted and so well written. I was like, what the fuck? And Lynette tries to kick her out, and Stella refuses. Stella is like, you don't fucking know what this is going to feel like. And when you start feeling it, you are going to need me there, and I'm not fucking leaving. And so that indicates to me we are getting a lot of Stella in season 4, and I'm very curious where they're going to go with Stella.
And then we get another nominee, at least. I know we already announced the winner, but a nominee, at least, for the next scene. Bree Vandekamp sitting on her bed, typing at her computer. And email for Danielle, or for Julie, from Danielle, and she calls Andrew into the room, and she gets that line reading where it's like, do the kids still say awesome?
Great. It's a great gif. I feel like I use that gif a lot. I've honestly, you can see she's pregnant in the gif, and so sometimes I've been nervous to use it around you because I didn't want you to like look too close and go, is she pregnant in that? So now that you've seen it, I can now use that gif all the time, so I'm very happy.
I have seen that gif before. I never noticed she was pregnant.
You're just like psychic, so I presumed you would.
Not when it comes to
pregnancy.
Not when it comes to prog.
And then Danielle calls Brie to complain, and this is how we know Danielle's not dead. Even though it looked like they fully murdered her earlier, and it's the reveal, though, like, again, a pretty soft reveal because it was pretty obvious Danielle is very big pregnant with Austin's baby, and we get the reveal that Bree's belly is indeed fake, as we assumed.
And then we cut to Mike. It's 3 a.m. again. There's a ring on the phone. He's got to head out to another job. And Susan doesn't want him to go. She tries to get him to stay, but he says, listen, it's just for a few more months until we can have the wedding. And as he leaves,
she goes, she runs across the hallway, and Julie like has the phone, and she's like, yeah, I did real good. And she has like this like southern accent or something. It's very silly.
They're like, we have half an hour, let's go. And we then instantly cut to Mike is driving his truck through a forest. And then the Reverend comes out. He has no eyes. He says, please, my son.
It did look like a horror movie, like him in the middle of the road, be like, and like the shot is just like the fucking headlights hitting the man. Like, it was really creepy, actually.
But he's like, please, my child, come with me. Put this on. And he sees he has a tux that says for Mike on it. And it was so sweet. It was a very Mike tux as well.
It's like this gorgeous tan color, and he looks so good in it.
And he starts, the priest starts leading Mike through the woods, and they get to this clearing, and there's an archway set up, there's lights everywhere, Julie is there, and it's just a nice private ceremony. It's too perfect!
It's perfect! It's perfect! I'm screaming, I'm clawing my eyes out. I sent you a photo of me teared the fuck up at this. I was crying watching this wedding. When I tell you, I've said it once, I'll say it a million goddamn times, I did not give a single shit about Susan and Mike my first binge of this show. And I don't know what it is about this watch. I love them so much. And this wedding was so cute. And I loved her speech of her saying, all like, I keep changing all the things I want. I don't know what flowers I want. I don't know what food I want. The only thing constant about my perfect wedding is standing right in front of me. And I was like, yes. Fuck yes. I love this. I loved Susan. So often Mike has to make compromises for Susan. because he wants her to be happy. And I loved Susan, like, gifting this to Mike. And it's just a great sign of how far they've come and how hopefully their marriage is going to go. And it made me so fucking happy. I could not believe it.
I feel like the strongest Mike and Susan moments are those exact ones where she kind of, like, gets over herself a bit to realize, oh,
yes,
I can, like, give this up because, like, this is all that really matters, you know? Like, it none of the big stuff actually matters. Like, you've said a million times already, like, he is the constant. What a way to end a season, because Mary Alice comes back.
It's very cute. She tells us, what yet again, family is the most important thing. They show up when we're in trouble. We see Stella. They push us to succeed. We see Victor's dad. They're the ones who keep our secrets. We see Orson. And then Mary Alice asks, what about the people who don't have family? What happens to those who have no loved ones to help them in their hour of need? And we end the season seeing Edie using the most dainty looking scarf of all time to hang herself. No, I mean, here's the thing. Like, that scarf is, like, see-through. Like, how is that holding her weight?
How is it holding her weight? It showed her hanging for a few seconds. Can I say something that's, like, not it is a spoiler for the next season, but it's also kind of common sense.
Sure, yeah.
That Edie is not going to die from this.
Sure.
I don't think she is. I mean, you can confirm nor deny. I don't know.
There's some people who are watching live with us, so I don't want to confirm or deny for that, yeah. There is no way that the second the next season starts, that scarf is not going to just unravel immediately. Because it's like one of those scarves that are, like, see-through that you tie over your head when you're, like, on a convertible. Like, that's what she, like, I just, it just does not seem like a appropriate thing to hang. That's a terrible sentence to say. But, like, yeah. But, yeah, what a way to end a season with our dear Edie possibly leaving us. I'm genuinely curious what the, like, when we watch this show so many times, I'm like, I wish I could go back and, like, know what it was like when it aired. And I'm very curious what people, like, thought when this episode aired, I guess. If you want to find us on social media, you can find us at Wisteria Gaze on Twitter and at Wisteria Gaze _ on Instagram. Or you can find us on our website, wisteria.gay. Ooh la la.
And if you go to wisteria.gay, you can also find our merch page. Get a little Wisteria Gay shirt. Get a little Abstinence Club shirt. Do it. You can also find links to our Discord. Our Discord is great. We all hang out there. There's a spoilery series discussion that I'm not allowed to go in.
Can't come in. You're not allowed.
But you can also find a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon is great. It helps support us. It helps support the show. We have, like, a $2 minimum. And if you do that, you get access to a lot of cool things. Like, we do ad-free episodes as well as episode show notes. We also do movie watches, which... We're gonna do it.
We have Don Tucker Must Die up there right now, though. If you're ever bored and want to watch Don Tucker Must Die with us, we have that up.
And you get... a shout out. We like to shout out our patrons at the end of the episode. So let's take the next, like, minute to do that.
I want
to
shout out Amanda.
Annie.
Aubrey.
Kaylin.
Cheryl.
Drusilla LaFay.
Elise.
Aaron.
Helena.
Jade.
Kim.
Lisa.
Liv.
Lydia.
Mac.
Nadia.
Sarah Schroeder.
Sarah Swihart.
Shane.
Susan.
Tom.
Victoria.
And Vincent.
Thank you so much for being our patrons.
Special kisses for our special babies.
Special juicy kisses.
Nobody else is allowed to have those kisses.
No.
No kiss. No.
But if you go subscribe, you can come back and then you can get those kisses. And how to do that is to go to patreon.com/wisteriagays.
Hell yeah.
You know what I love, Mackenzie?
Tell me what you love.
I love reviews.
Me too.
Reviews are great. They help people find the show. They help build our little community, and they make our day reading them. And yeah, at the end of every episode, we like posing a question to help get those review juices flowing. And I think the question for this week...
What is the something new you're getting for Gabby at her wedding? I think the something new I'm getting her is a brand new engagement ring. Because I'm saying, don't marry this other person. Marry me instead. Because Victor fucking sucks. Alternate choice is I would get her a pair of Crocs to wear down the aisle.
I love that. Are they heeled Crocs?
Absolutely. Absolutely heeled Crocs for Gabby to wear at the wedding. If she decides not to take my ring, I will say, okay, fine. You still need something new. Here are some heeled Crocs.
My something new to Gabby on her wedding day is when you get back from your honeymoon, there's a therapist waiting to just talk about whatever you need to talk about.
Therapy. It's a very good gift.
Yay.
So when you leave us a review, let us know what's something new you're getting Gabby on her wedding day. And yeah, we love you. Leave us a review.
Mackenzie.
Ned.
I love you.
I love you so much.
And to everyone else out there, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.